Welcome to the Mortise and Tenon Magazine podcast, where we're celebrating historic furniture making. This is episode number 47. I'm Mike Updegraff.
And I'm Joshua Klein.
And issue 13 of Mortise and Tenon Magazine has shipped out. It's always a relief when this thing comes back from the printer and starts its way to subscribers. This year, more than most, because of backlogs with supplies and paper troubles and things like that.
Oh, don't bring it up.
Yeah. It was a relief to have this thing out.
The printing industry is, you know, feeling it. Paper is in short supply. We are so relieved to have this in hand and to see it. And it looks beautiful. And especially with the paper that we use, it's a really specific premium paper. Mm-hmm. And so trying to find that, it was hard before. And now It's like, for months, we didn't have it.
Yeah. You know, so we've been looking ahead and going, okay, how do we secure this paper against any crazy economic issues for the future? So I think we'll be all right. I think it'll be good. We're not going to have to start printing on newsprint. So if you're a subscriber, you should see that issue in your mailbox if you haven't gotten it already.
Yeah. We've been working on the old house, the house by hand project. We've been working on this, the small little barn. The frame is, I would say, 99% ready to go. We finished up some repairs, making some pegs, getting everything just about ready. And in the next week, or maybe the next week, we'll see. We'll be standing that frame up and assembling it. And then the house will be joined to it. So we're going to raise it in two separate parts. So we've been talking about that on the Daily Dispatch. And it's just been a lot of joinery repair, big hewn timbers, scratching
our
heads.
Some heroic repairs.
Heroic.
As they are termed in the timber framing or timber restoration industry. Yeah, some of them are. Basically, the goal is to maximize the amount of old material in this frame. We're not just like lopping off the last 6 feet of a timber and scarfing in a new piece. We're trying to save as much original material as possible. So
that makes it tricky.
Some heroism.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah.
Also new is we have in our store a new course, a new online video course called The Maker's Marks. And this is an investigation, exploration, in-depth study of antiques and period furniture and just how to examine period furniture. So this is many hours of video footage of Joshua walking through and examining different pieces, noting tool marks, noting different aspects of it that really point to a handmade origin. He also actually looks at some pieces that look authentic but are in fact, you know, later 20th century replicas and what you can look for there to identify fakes.
Yeah, I mean, I think we came up with this course because a lot of people who are interested in hand tool woodworking have not seen up close, you know, stuck their heads under authentic antique or, you know, handmade furniture. And so they don't really know what it looks like. They don't know what they're shooting for. And, you know, I don't know if you've had that experience as you're listening, thinking, you know, I've struggled with hand tools, but I don't really know what it's supposed to look like.
Right.
I don't know what the tolerances are. I don't know what authentic handwork looks like. So this program is designed to, you know, it's basically pulling back the velvet ropes at the museum and handing every woodworker a flashlight and say, let's go, dig your head in there, pull those drawers out. Let's look at every nook and cranny so that you can know what it looks like, what workman-like work looks like. It's a powerful program, I think, to be able to see that. The more you see of authentic handwork, the more confident you're going to be in the shop. So this course has been, we've been getting some good feedback about it. This is the program I wish that was available when I was starting hand tools, because I thought, I don't even know. I'm not a machine. And my work doesn't look like a machine. And this course is showing you, hey, that's not a relevant source of distress.
Right?
You are actually a person, and that's okay.
Yeah. I mean, you can't learn this any other way except looking at other handmade furniture. And what better furniture to examine than that made by those who are so skilled and can work so quickly? It just really has a lot to teach us. So that course is available on our website. And until the end of the month, we have a discount. You get $5 off if you sign up for a month of the Daily Dispatch, which is it's a great deal because you get both the subscription to the Dispatch and then the Maker's Marks, which is actually a very affordable course. It's not expensive at all. So
So if you get on mortisontenandmag.com, you can find that course. And you can also find a connection to the Daily Dispatch. Get signed up for that. So just loads of content, loads of antique handwork. And if you're a nerd like us about that kind of stuff, welcome to getting lost in this.
Yeah, so. Totally. So for this podcast, we wanted to talk about what we've been doing the last couple days. It's been an amazing couple days.
Yeah, so we're all tired.
Yeah, we are worn out, but in a good way. So we've had our first annual apprenticeship summit here. So the M&T apprenticeship program is our online 8-week hand tool woodworking program, our class, our course. Mm-hmm. So people sign up for that and they go through 8 weeks of things like sharpening, stock prep, cutting joinery, using hand planes, tuning up hand planes. We go through a green woodworking week where our students are actually going into the woods and chopping down trees and riving up that stock. And so we've done 4 terms of this. We've had well over 100 students in the program, and we decided to have a big get together because these people are from, literally all over the world, many of them from far corners of the United States. And we said, hey, we're going to have this thing at the end of summer in Maine. If you can make it, please come. Bring your families. We'll have 2 days of food and fun and demonstrations and examine some antiques and just hang out by the campfire. And so that was Friday and Saturday.
Yeah, it was so awesome. Week. I mean, So the program is designed with camaraderie in mind. Mm-hmm. There's a forum and everyone has homework due on Monday. But as they're going through each week, there's this forum and there's this constant dialogue. All of the students are asking questions, bouncing ideas off each other. We have office hours that we answer questions as well, but it really is a group dynamic that happens. However, a lot of these people, I couldn't even place the name to the face because you're seeing pictures of someone's bench, but not necessarily seeing them and knowing them in person, face to face. So this gathering was so awesome. We had people come from all over the place, all over the United States, traveled up here to our little corner in rural Maine. And we had a lot of amazing food. And we had campfires and lots of good discussions. So we wanted to talk about that a little bit, talk about some of the stuff that we did and what we learned from each other, because we had quite a range of experiences and different insights. And, everyone had a kind of a different focus or emphasis in what they were interested in. And we learned so much. We learned personally so much. And I think everybody just felt like, it was like drinking from the fire hose. We all walked away with our minds reeling about, how we can, and the next thing to make.
Always with these kinds of in-person, face-to-face events, we come away with like a list of books we have to buy and a list of things to check out and a list of concepts to study up on because, everyone in their experience has just different knowledge and different things to bring in, different perspectives. And it's so great to have that all together at the table, so to speak. So in making preparation for this summit, a week before, our apprenticeship program TA, Joachim came up. He traveled up from Virginia to spend the week up here with us to help us get stuff ready around here. And we found that we did that so quickly that we were able to actually work on the house by hand project with him.
Yeah, Joachim was doing a lot of joinery repairs with us and that kind of thing. And it was such a blast to have him helping us scribe some tenons on the house and that kind of thing. So he's an awesome guy. He's the perfect TA. He was actually in term one.
Right.
But he was such a skilled student who also was able to bring others alongside his work that we said, oh man, we got to talk to this guy.
Yeah, about see doing if he wants TA to continue work. On because yeah. he was almost functioning as that. He was encouraging everyone else in that term, and and just offering helpful insights and helpful resources. And we said, oh, we need to see if he wants to keep doing this because that is a valuable role. So Joachim was up, and we got everything squared away. We were, you know, ready for everyone to arrive. So we had laid out, we sat down and talked about what to schedule, what to do. We came up with a list that was way too long.
Yep.
We had, and we're like, okay, we got to cut this out. We only have 2 days. I mean, come on, this is like a week's worth of stuff.
Yeah, I was feeling, starting to feel bad before they came, like these poor people are going to show up and we're going to bludgeon them with this like amazing amount of stuff to do. And they're going to be like, oh, too much.
So we thinned down the schedule, and even with that, we still removed some things, because what ends up happening inevitably is that everyone gathers around talking about something and you just lose track of time, and you just blast right through a few different scheduled things, so which is great. That was absolutely fine. Mm-hmm. One of the big things we wanted to do was antique exams. So we have a bunch of pieces here in the shop, and Joshua down at your house and stuff, and so we... every morning we'd start by laying out all these antiques around the shop. We'd lay them on their sides, on their backs. We set flashlights and UV lights around, and everyone came in and we just started talking about what we were seeing. And so a lot of that furniture is the same stuff that you would see in the Maker's Marks course. You know, it's the same tables and same chairs and things, but our students got to come in and pull their drawers out and turn them over and actually pick out some things that we hadn't noticed, because that's what happens when you get more eyes going. So that was a really great way to start that, and coffee. It's the best way to start
morning. Two. Yeah, antique furniture and coffee.
So if you have a warm mug in your hand while you're looking at the 1700s English desk, that's ideal, really. How can you beat that?
That's the way to start a day.
Yeah. So, I mean, speaking of coffee and food, we ate really well over the weekend.
Yeah, we did.
So Mike C. Smokes meat, and so those were the pigs that you raised, correct?
Those are actually from a local farm.
Okay, but, yeah. I wasn't sure if that was still the same, because you had
the pigs that were featured on a prior podcast episode.
That's right.
We've consumed all that meat now.
Yeah. So Mike smoked a bunch of pork, and there was chili, and I think everyone probably gained a little bit of weight over the time. I know I certainly did. Grace made cookies. Mm-hmm. Those were really good.
But yeah, I mean, I think the thing about it too is like this gathering, you know, we could say, well, you know, we're going to have this woodworking conference, and we'll have some breakout classes, and then you can go and get lunch in the cafeteria. That kind of like everybody's kind of on their own and do their own thing. But what we said, no, let's have a gathering and have, you know, feasting together. And it's just the opportunity to sit down at the same tables, sit around the campfire, and to continue the discussions we just had, all feasting together. It just really was such a, you know, for lack of a better word, a community building thing. Mm-hmm. A lot of us talked about at lunch. We were talking about Lou, how he had he grew up in China and is living on the East Coast here, and he had some friends from China and then went back to China, and he's feeling that loss of community that he had. And we were talking about, you know, just the idea of a lot of us want that sense of community back. We want to be able to know our neighbors and know people close, to have those kinds of bonds, and not everybody has that. Things are strange today. Mm. But what we were able to taste a little bit at the summit gathering was these rebuilding of these bonds. And now when we think about community, as strange as it is, we had something that we all bonded on and around, and we all gathered together, and we had people from all over, totally different kinds of people, this huge diversity of people that you would have never thought to stick together in one, you know, one gathering. And it was just such an amazing thing to see people unified around one core thing, and to see a bunch of different ages. We had little kids running around at the campfire, and it was just to see that huge diversity of backgrounds and interests all together at tables saying, we want connection with people. We want to know our neighbors and know community. And this was an opportunity to kind of, maybe it's a simulation of true community, but at least it's something. It was a deep time of bonding across, you know, geographic or ideological or whatever borders there might be, we are able to sit down at a table and share those things.
Yeah. And we played some games in the little bit of free time that we had here and there. We had some axe throwing out back, which is always fun. We also played a game that we learned from the CSF crew when they were here a few years ago to raise the blacksmith shop. It's called Slack'em. And so I'll try and describe it. You're standing on a hewn wood chip with the round on the outside, so it rocks, right? And I say chip, it's like the size of a dinner plate.
It's like if you had a log round
and you split
a third of it off or a half of it off. So you're standing on the flat, but the round is down to the ground.
So it's unsteady. And you have two people facing each other on these chips. They're about 10 feet apart. And they have a rope that is like 20-some feet long probably.
Yeah.
And so you start at the end of the rope. You say, ready, set, go. And you got to pull in as much as you can of the rope. So everybody grabs a bunch until the rope is taut.
There are only two players.
Two players.
Yeah.
And then the goal is to get the other person to fall off their piece of wood. Now, how do you do that?
Or to get the whole rope.
Or to get the whole rope. If you can take their rope away, then you win. So do you just pull them off? Because if they resist, you're going to fall forward. Do you let them take rope and then stop it? Well, maybe they'll fall backwards if they get too greedy. But it is hilarious. Yeah. And the thing about this game is strength does not win. Size does not win. Like half the time, the little kids win, right? Because they got better balance. It's just hilarious to watch. You know, you got these big 6 foot plus guys and these little like 8 year olds, and they're competing against each other. And it's just so much fun. It's as much fun to watch as it is to play. But we got a couple of ropes out to do that. Also, Bruce's kids really enjoyed the game of Tie Up Mike, which
I love that game.
I didn't enjoy it as much, but I was able to get away from most of the efforts. So that's a danger of rope-based games. You might end up getting tied up. But we did several demonstrations during these couple days.
Yeah, it wasn't all fun in games.
It wasn't all fun. Yeah, it was. Some of it was serious. Joshua, you demonstrated work holding. A lot of these concepts from the book, your book, Worked, that was just released recently.
Yeah. I mean, so that book, Worked, was building off of Joined. And what I wanted to do with this demonstration was just kind of say, okay, you know, all these bizarre work holding situations that we might find ourselves in, here's what they look like. Here are the things that feed into making choices about how do I hold this piece of wood. Now, if you're listening and you're not a woodworker, you might say, what in the world? What a dumb thing to talk about. How do I hold this piece of wood? Isn't there just a right answer? Mm-hmm. Well, no, not really, because you have a lot of different considerations. Not only do you have the limitations of your bench, your work arrangement, but also you have to think about, well, you know, say it's a leg of a table that you're working with. You have four sides to plane. And so if you end up putting it into your front vise, that's one thing. If you end up putting it into a tail vise, it's another thing. But if it's also, you know, what we call free work holding, if it's just resting, laying on the bench up against a planing stop, a toothed bench hook, then that's a whole nother thing, because you're able to use and work the piece in different ways and faster, and there are different considerations. So the demonstration was looking at that kind of thing, different ways to do work holding. I also presented somewhat of an argument for having your workbench against the wall, because you can use the wall itself, stabilizes the bench, but also you can use the wall as a stop for a lot of different operations. And I looked at the peg holding system that I discovered in Jonathan Fisher's work. Jonathan Fisher was a Maine furniture maker. And his workbench has a series of peg holes, and it has this unique arrangement. I talked about this in my first book, Hands Employed to Write. And so I was demonstrating that. And it was interesting, we were talking about traversing, you know, planing across the grain and the different ways people do it. And I kind of talked through them and showed them, and everyone was familiar. And then I said, and now here's this other way in the peg holding system. And I saw all these faces like, what? That's so easy and so steady and so, you know, I can't believe it. So it was fun to be able to explore that. And it wasn't just a monologue. It wasn't just a lecture, but there was a lot of discussion that happened. A lot of people were chipping in and showing, you know, talking about how they tackle things or some things they've struggled with. So yeah, it was really good to be able to have everybody in the room, they're all woodworkers.
Right.
A big group of woodworkers. And we all were just talking and showing and, you know, out loud, looking at work holding situations. I mean, wouldn't you die to be a part of that? It was just so awesome. It was so cool.
Yeah. And everyone had a bit of a run through with the spring pole lathe too.
Yeah.
You gave a bit of a demonstration and then
quick one.
Just went at it, went to town, did some turning. That was a lot of fun. Many in the room had never turned anything before on any kind of lathe. So that was great. It's a good introduction. And obviously it's dead simple. You know, you hang a stick in your rafters with a string and then you just have two adjustable centers and you can get turning.
Yeah. So simple to build, very hard to do.
Yes. Yeah.
Very hard to turn, which is what's so addicting about it.
Exactly. So on day two, had lots of conversations. Like it evolved into many conversations. I was able to bring everyone up the road to a local preserve trail for a woods walk. And you might think, what does that have to do with woodworking?
A woods walk?
Yeah, exactly.
At a woodworking event?
Yeah. But the woods are where we get our resources. And woodworkers gain a deeper understanding of the nature of wood just by working it. But by walking through the forest, by learning how trees grow, you can, to a whole other degree of appreciation for the material and the way it grows, the way trees work, really, the way that ecology works. And so we walked around, we talked about species and growth habits. We talked about, you know, ancient inhabitants of this area, the red paint people, different archaeological finds. We talked about bedrock. We talked about wasps and we talked about caterpillars, and it was so much fun.
Yeah, at dinner after that, everybody was just like buzzing. Like everybody's eyes, they were all wide and they're like, I couldn't believe it. My mind is blown and I have a list of books I want to read. And it was pretty awesome.
Yeah.
I got the sense that some of them were skeptical before they went. They're like, what? We're going to go look at trees? This is weird.
Yeah.
And they came back like electric, you know, just like buzzing, excited. So
yeah, it was super fun. We also all managed to get some work done, actually some work towards the finishing of the House by Hand project.
Yeah.
We brought some big stumps over, some maple, and rived them up, split them up, and started making pegs for that frame. All right, so what's your name? Where are you from?
Bruce Kelly, and I'm from San Diego originally, but now I'm a Texan by zip code.
Texan by zip code, and you came all the way to Maine just to hang out with a bunch of woodworkers for 2 days.
Yeah, I sure
Why
did.
Why would you do that?
Well, it worked out just coincidentally. I put this vacation in before I even heard about it.
Nice.
And
so going to Maine.
The dates fell perfectly, and we bought the tickets and decided to spend a few days up here.
Yeah, so you and your wife and 5 kids made the trek.
Yes.
And so which term of the apprenticeship program were you in?
I was in the spring term.
Okay.
And that was fun because it kind of forced, well, my wife encouraged me to take the course, and then it kind of forced me to move my tools into our living room. And I built the workbench up against the far side of the living room.
Right.
And ever since then, it's been sawdust and shavings.
Yeah, so your kids like gather around and watch you working in your living room.
Yeah, right? Part of our homeschool routine is to spend time with mom and dad doing our job. So if it's mom, it's working with the books and cooking meals and doing all that stuff. But when it's with dad, we're either fixing the house or we're at the bench working on the next project.
Nice. So how did going through the program change the way you approach woodworking, if it did?
I would say the biggest change was just instead of treating it more like something I had to set aside special time for on a weekend, now I treat it like something that I do.
Right.
I try to do it every day instead of, you know, some special thing. It doesn't happen every day, but
nice.
Yeah, and it's not a special thing. It's a thing that we do every day.
Right.
That's how I want to treat it.
Well, that's awesome. Thank you for coming all this way.
Of course.
So, Joachim, you have been here with us for the week.
For the week, you
came in to help get set up for the summit.
Yeah.
And you are term one from the apprenticeship program.
Correct.
So you're one of the guinea pigs, right?
Yes.
You're one of the first crew through. So how did going through the program change, if it did, the way you approach woodworking?
Well, I'll tell you, I immediately stopped using any kind of power tools.
Okay.
And my hand tool woodwork has really climbed, skyrocketed, to where I feel so comfortable that I wouldn't even want to use a machine.
Mm. Nice.
It's just, you know, it's just a great program, and I was fortunate enough to see the next three terms go through.
Right.
And continue to learn with them.
Yeah.
You know?
So, yeah, so we brought Joachim on as a TA for the program after that first term. He was very willing and very, we saw in the forums just that he was helping everyone, his fellow apprentices, and we just saw a lot of capability and a lot of willingness to help. And so he came on and has gone through all the subsequent terms. And yeah, it's been great. And to finally get to meet you in person has been wonderful. So
yeah, to see the shop and see where all these instructions were videoed.
Right.
And get to take part in the house by hand.
Yeah.
It's just been a great week. And experience all the weather that Maine has to offer.
Yes, we had howling winds and pouring rain and thunder and lightning. No snow yet.
No snow. Yeah, sorry.
How long the snow. Are you sticking around?
I'm out of here tomorrow morning.
Okay, yeah. So probably you won't see that this time.
I hope to miss the snow.
Yeah. All right, so Bill, you were term two.
Yes.
All right, so what did you take home, so to speak, about from your time in the apprenticeship program?
Well, I've tried hand tool working with greater or lesser success over the years, and this was just as close to hands-on as possible, seeing someone who actually knew what they were doing and could transmit that.
Right.
And I could see, everything from body positioning to what matters, what doesn't matter, don't fuss over with things that don't need to be fussed over.
Right.
So my woodworking is, I guess, become a lot more practical.
Mm.
Yeah. So I guess that's the main takeaway.
Yeah.
And also just sharing knowledge with all the great people here.
Yeah. So how far did you travel to get here?
From Wisconsin.
That's a ways.
Yeah. I took a 20-minute drive and then a 2.5-hour bus ride and a 2 or so hour plane trip and then another 4 or 5 hours driving up here.
So, yeah.
A little bit of a trip, but it was
worth
it.
Come a long way. Yeah.
Yeah, it was worth it. It's beautiful here.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Very glad that you could come.
Certainly. You'll probably see more of me if there's another one.
I hope so.
Yeah, and that was fun. You know, I think it's it was Joachim who said, hey, maybe we could have, if they want, they could work on some pegs for the house. And I was like, yeah, okay, sure. We can offer it. And, you know, someone said, so where's the whitewash? Are we going to whitewash
your house?
Yeah,
what are we going to do?
You know, like, it's this idea of like, hey, since everyone's here, how about you can work for my house project? But it was a good way to razz me. But we pulled out those stumps. It was great because we instantly had, wedges out. We're doing riving. We had froze out. We had a shaving horse. Someone was working at the shaving horse. We had vices. Inside people were working at. We had somebody planing peg stock into octagons. And then we also had the cuchilla. We also had this push knife. It's like a draw knife, but push knife that we featured before. And so it was great. Everyone was able to kind of try those different ways of forming, of making these pegs for the timber frame. And it was a really great illustration of taking such a simple thing. You start with a tree, split it with wedges, then take a fro, split it down smaller. Then you can bring it to these there are four different ways we were making pegs, yeah. and people were able to experiment with different ones.
And a handful awesome. Of different axes.
Oh, and then the axes.
Yeah. Lou brought yeah. his, he has these traditional Chinese carpenter's axes. So he has two of them. One is completely factory made in like 11 minutes start to finish. It's and a, the other one.
Completely robotic process to, right. to make it.
And the other one took a month to take by skilled craftsmen. And so we had a lot of discussion about those two axes that look almost identical just yeah. at a glance, but very different
process. Super interesting.
And then, so we're hewing and shaping and it's just great. I mean, the time flies when you do that. But in the, both evenings, even though we had some wind come up, especially the first night, we built a campfire and mm-hmm. Everyone kind of gathered around that. You definitely needed it for warmth outside. It's getting a little chilly. But the second night especially was really mm. neat. One of our students brought his guitar.
On the back of his motorcycle.
On the back of his motorcycle. He rode up from Pittsburgh and his plan was from here to head south to Florida to retrace all of Route 1, but there may be a hurricane messing up those plans. Hopefully not, but we'll see. So he sat down and he sang everything from 12th century French songs to Metallica in
as
the
you
acoustic
do.
style. And then we also got to hear a traditional Chinese work song, and we had some kids singing "What Do You Do with a Drunken Sailor," you know? And yeah. so it's the campfire sing-along. It's like the best thing ever. So we're all sitting there under the stars, singing some songs and just enjoying the evening.
And never failed to fail. Was the easiest thing to do. When we'll survive, be invested. Somebody fine will come along, made me forget about loving you. Down here on the farm, the weather gets messy. Laying around with nothing to do. When you went away, it took my cow Bessie. And I miss you, darling, more than I miss you. Got out of town on a boat from the Southern Islands. Sailing the reef, boat follows in the sea. We're headed for the treats on the outside. And the downhill run to Pukatepe.
I got the sense everyone was reluctant to leave.
Yeah.
When they were kind of packing up as people were filtering out, they were sort of, you know, I saw a few choked up people. I mean, it was mm-hmm. it was pretty moving, especially at the second night to have everybody singing and sharing songs. And some of them were call and response and we were singing along together. It was pretty cool to, it was a rich experience. You don't get much.
Right.
You don't get much generally speaking these days, but especially in the past few years, you know, there's just not been as much of that going on in the world. And so it was just such a rich time that was so unique and special to get people together and mm-hmm. to sing together and to eat together and to share work together. It was just moving.
Yeah.
So we are looking at the next round of this apprenticeship program. The next term opens and it runs through April and May, but the registration opens in February. So we're just pumped about this program. It's shifting to a once per year schedule. And so we're going to be doing this one time per year, April and May, 2023. And so if you're interested in this program, jump over on the website for that, mtapprenticeship.com, and you'll find that that program, the apprenticeship course. And you can the best way to get in touch with that is to sign up for the waitlist. Mm-hmm. We do have a growing waitlist. And the people on the wait list will be notified of the opening day first, and they'll have first dibs.
Right.
So if you really want to get down this program, get on the wait list. You'll know first, and then after, you know, after that's gone, run its course, we'll announce it to other people. But this program's coming up. You know, in February, there's going to be a sign up. So jump on the website and at least get on the wait list and see if you can arrange your life to invest, to cultivate craft, and to get to know other people who are doing the same.
Yeah, and then you can look ahead to next fall and our next apprenticeship summit, which we'll
yes.
be having here.
Yeah. So thank you for listening to the Mortise and Tenon podcast. If you haven't already, you can subscribe to listen to this wherever you get your podcasts, iTunes or Stitcher or SoundCloud or Spotify or I don't know, whatever else there is in the world today. If you have any comments or questions, you can leave them below.